Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series created by Robert Jordan.
At its conclusion, the series will consist of 14 novels and one prequel novel.
Sadly, Robert Jordan did not live to see his work complete.
Brandon Sanderson, appointed by Mr. Jordan's widow, Harriet Rigney, will complete the series with the novels The Gathering Storm, Towers of Midnight, and A Memory of Light, based on the notes left by Mr. Jordan.
This podcast is dedicated to discussing and enjoying the monumental work of fiction that is The Wheel of Time.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com. I, of course, am Andrew Gellos, and with us this week is Virginia.
Hi, Andrew. It's great to be back. And also with us today for the first time in a while is Jesse.
Hi, everybody. It's really great to be here as always. Also with us today is Mark.
Yeah, it's been a while, but I'm back. I'm glad to be here. Hello, everyone. And as usual, couldn't do a podcast without our awesome editor, Spencer.
Hey, everyone. Great to be here. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Varen, and we have a very special guest with us, the Tamerlan of Theoryland, Matt Hatch.
Thank you very much. I'm excited.
Woohoo! We're happy to have you here. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast.
And this is awesome for me because this is Varen is one of my very, very absolutely most favorite characters in the entire Wheel of Time series, and that's going some.
Yeah, you're not the only one who loves her. I've loved her since day one.
Hello.
Yeah,
I want her back.
I had a chance to, I think we will get her back a little bit. I'd be surprised if we don't get some cross time, a little bit of Varen back in this next book, or have we heard otherwise, but I think we start 2 weeks earlier this time, doesn't it? Maybe I'm mistaken, but I thought we would get a little. That's why Grendel is going to show back up in the next book, too, as far as I know. But I'm hoping to. Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm hoping we get a little bit of more of Varen before she completely disappears from the series.
But before we go too far into that, Matt, I want to give you a chance real quick just to talk about your work with Theoryland, kind of plug your internet website. I mean, we get a lot on here. Obviously, we're hosted by Dragonmount, and so we do a lot of advertising for them. But I want to give you a chance to advertise your website, your fan site now real quick.
Sure. I'm probably the worst person to plug it. People at Theoryland do a much better job than I do. In essence, you know, we started off with just because I have an insane obsession with small details and love that they might possibly have some meaning. And as you all know, the Wheel of Time is full of those. So I think when I started on the internet, when I got into it, and initially I just wanted to hear from everybody what their ideas were. And unfortunately, over the time, it's kind of grown a little bit more snobbish, I think, around my parts. But we try to stop that from happening just because we've been discussing the same old things over and over again. But we love to hear new ideas. And if you can ignore, you know, a couple of voices here every once in a while that get a little bit ticked off about talking about the same old subjects, feel free to bring up old subjects too. But yeah, Theoryland is a great place to bring up the insane or not so insane. But we get a lot of loony ideas there, probably because we've talked the not so loony ideas to death. So it's a fun place. It's kind of we like to think of ourselves as the black sheep of the Wheel of Time online community. So come join us. We love to hear new ideas. We have a lot of people. A lot of people tell me all the time that they lurk the site, but they don't feel confident in saying anything. And I'm trying to change that, but it's kind of hard once you have that reputation to change it.
So you mean Virginia there hasn't been trolling and posting up crazy idea after crazy idea like she does in our comment threads?
Not under my name.
Exactly. We never know. It's funny that I think lately there's been more kind of cross-posting between forums than there ever has been. And so it's funny to see different users show up. Because when you show up on a new forum, I think it's a little bit, you don't have maybe the rep or the authority you had at the other one that you've more, you know, frequented more often. So it's fun to get new users, and it's fun to jump over. I jump over to Dragonmount every once in a while to discuss Asmodian, of course. And I'll be honest, I've jumped on that in possibly long thread many times over the last 5 years, and just to plug in the latest suspect.
How many hundreds of pages is that thread now?
I have no idea anymore. It's in the many hundreds. I don't know what it is.
Nice.
And as Brandon said, if anybody's right.
See, that wasn't that a terrible plug for Theyland? I'm just not good at it. I know.
It's a great plug.
That was great. Before we go too much further in the podcast, it should, of course, be noted that we will be talking about things that happen throughout the entirety of the Wheel of Time, and sometimes we even branch into other series, whether on purpose or by sheer tangential accident. So be forewarned that if you haven't read through all of the books within the Wheel of Time series, you may want to tune out because we're probably going to spoil some stuff for you, and we really, really hate when we spoil people on things that they really didn't want to know.
If we spoil it, we spoil it.
It feels to me, if you bring on the leader of Theyland.com, then anyone listening has to believe there's going to be something spoiled.
Well, I have to say that we have to really be careful now because I really famously spoiled the end of Mistborn for a bunch of people totally without thinking about it, and nobody caught it in editing, and it's like, oh, my goodness, because I unfortunately have the evil reputation of being, and here's Alba playing in the background, the tangent queen. So I frequently branch off into other series and everything, and that just popped right out, and I never even thought about it. And it should have been cut out, and it wasn't, and oops. So we had at least a half a dozen emails and comments about that. Most of the people were pretty nice, but they were not happy.
There were one or two that were a little bit on the miffed side. We've been apologizing profusely to everybody as soon as she could, and pretty much every podcast.
I'm sorry. Couldn't help
I'm just going to pre-apologize. I'm sorry I ruined it for you. Okay, so where do we start from here? Where do we go from here?
Well, we can just jump right on into Varen.
I think
everybody knows who Varen is. Let me start it properly. I think, as Andrew mentioned, our topic for today is going to be the inimitable Varen Aes Sedai, Varen Mathlin of the Brown Aja. And she obviously was a key figure in the Gathering Storm, and much to my everlasting regret, will no longer be with us. But we have things to discuss about Varen even still. So hopefully we are going to embark on that topic and perhaps shed some light on something as we go.
Oh, I certainly hope so. I guess the big thing that we should talk about first, I mean, the big reveal right near, it wasn't quite the middle, it was more towards the end of the Gathering Storm, was that Varen was in fact not, as everyone had assumed previously, of the Brown Aja, but was instead actually a Black Sister. And that in of itself is kind of a shocking revelation, but then she follows it up with what she had been doing while she was working within the Black Aja all these years. And I think that is the best place for us to start right now, is Varen, the light friend in the Black Aja.
It's about time, I have to say, that we had somebody from our side infiltrating the bad guys. There seems to be a lot of the other way going along, but we don't have too many good guys infiltrating the dark side. So
what I love about what she reveals, though, is it's not, like the Umbrellan sent her. She says that she did it to save her skin, and she made the best of the moment since she wanted to live, which to me is very classically Varen, which is something I love about her. And the entire time she's speaking to Egwene thinks this is all about her and what she's trying to accomplish, and she doesn't realize that Varen is telling her that there's something much more grand going on that she's discovered, and she just needs to shut up and listen, And it's such a great moment because she's so patient as she's dying, But I think that was when I went back and read it, it was to see her, to hear her kind of talk about this wasn't, her master plan ever since she was born, but it was something that she kind of made the best of and certainly did, for a very long time. And I can't wait to hear some of the things that beyond what we already learned. There's going to be much more, I'm sure, that's to be revealed in the next two books.
Well, we do have the unknown stack of letters that she had when she gave Matt his. So there's definitely some more information floating around. We don't know who she gave those to or what happened to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Brandon has said this I don't know how many times, especially as I forced him to answer an Asmodean question. He finds it funny that we're obsessing, in almost the same way that Egwene obsesses about very kind of insignificant things. I mean, she almost refers to the squabble between the Ajahs as just kind of, you know, like a little playground issue compared to what she's been doing. And in that same way, I think Brandon, you know, when he looks at some of the things we're discussing, he keeps on asking why we're not discussing Varen and all the implications that come along with what she told Egwene.
Yeah.
Such as those letters.
Part of the thing that stuck me, though, with that was it's almost like, at least in my mind, it was almost too much of a shock at once. I mean, the way it came about was beautifully written, don't get me wrong, but it was almost like too much of an overload. And I think that's one of the things that's happened with a lot of people is that, I mean, we've been so caught up in the Asmodean thing since it happened. I mean, that gives us, what, 7-8 years of which to build on this? I mean, Varen is one of those people, she's sort of been flitting in and out of the series off and on, doing the most random stuff so you never know what the heck she is, whether she is good or she is black. I mean, it finally got clued up in number 12 here, but, I mean, what happened and the way it came out almost seemed like, as I said, it's like a sensory overload. It's like, whoa, what the hey?
Well, and if that weren't overload, go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead, Desi.
That's a really good point. Another thing, I think for me personally, when I read that particular section, it's so traumatic and upsetting, even though it's beautifully written, what's happening to that character that you've become so attached to, that I think it's hard to focus on the details that she's revealing because you're so emotionally distraught over what's happening to her.
Yeah, there are very many things going on there, for sure.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mira.
No, what's funny is that I remember, I think I've told the story a couple times, I remember jumping out of my chair when I got to page 598, I think it is. I was such a, I mean, to find out, I mean, for those of us that have been reading the books for so long, I mean, Varen's always been a favorite character. And so to finally kind of have this gotcha or aha moment, and it's certainly it's traumatic, but it was also very, I mean, I was excited. I mean, I know she, obviously I wasn't excited that she died a couple of pages later, but the excitement was just that we were finally, you know, this whole kind of idea that she'd been working on this plan for so long and what she'd been doing for 12 books. And I wonder if there was, you know, it seemed so important to Robert Jordan to keep this one tucked away, the way he would answer questions about Varen. If you go back and look at some of his interviews, didn't want this one. He wanted this one. It feels to me like he really wanted this kind of traumatic moment where, you know, this character we'd like to follow, but we didn't really know much about that she really, there was so much there that we'll never really know. And I think he kind of, to me, the way that this has come about, he wanted it that way.
Yeah, I'm sort of hoping that that's not one of the issues that he wrote in the notes. This does not get resolved and that does not get resolved and so forth, because I really want to know more about it. I mean, you could almost write an entire other book just on Varen's, you know, life and interaction with everything from her point of view. I think that would be completely awesome, but obviously that wasn't on the radar for, you know, Robert Jordan.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Brandon answered a question during the tour. He just said, that, yeah, he said there were, the notes were really extensive, and he said his quote was, or the quote that they have him saying was, he said he felt like what wasn't revealed in the books would be a good candidate for the encyclopedia. So.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll get more, much more about her story at that time.
That would be great. Go ahead.
I said, yay, Great White Book version 2. More complete this time.
Yeah, exactly.
I sort of wondered if that wasn't the issue that she was referring to when she was interrogating the Aes Sedai in the Aiel tents outside of Carrion, and she reflects to herself that it had been, forgive me, I can't remember the exact number of years, but it had been, say, arbitrarily 40-some years since she'd last encountered a problem that she couldn't, or a task she couldn't complete, or a problem she couldn't solve. I apologize for not looking that up beforehand. And I'm wondering if that was the thing that she wasn't able to resolve to her satisfaction, that she had been basically caught and had to swear to the Black Aja in order to stay alive and continue to do her work.
Yeah, it was 71 years. It was kind of that theory that went around for a while, or it was kind of a question. It was one of the ones I remember initially wondering was what her 70-year plan was. And it seems pretty indicative here that this is kind of the plan. I think you're right, that this was her mistake, which she kind of made good on, tried to, as she explained to Egwene.
Yeah, pretty awesome. What, you know, she's just totally an awesome character. There's just no getting around it. She's sort of the archetypical mysterious Aes Sedai in my mind.
What was everyone's opinion? I mean, what did you feel about Varen or about her kind of? I mean, there's obviously all those pieces of Varen that we got. You know, for example, the lie or the supposed lie regarding Moraine sending her, and kind of all the things that went on in the first couple books. Any of you feel like Varen had mixed loyalties before you kind of had this reveal moment?
I never thought, I'm going to jump in first here, I'm sorry. I never really thought that Varen was a dark friend. That kind of came out of left field for me. What I thought was that some traumatic experience or some event had happened that somehow freed her from one or more of the oaths, in something on the order of Swan and Lyanna being stilled. And some event happened, and she might have retaken a couple of them or just sort of proceeded on without retaking them. And so sometimes, in typical Aes Sedai fashion, held her nose and did what she needed to do, even though it wasn't strictly according to the law. That was my take on that whole thing. I never thought that she would have been a Black Aja, involuntarily or not.
Yeah. Again, I had to agree with Virginia on this one. I never thought that we would see Varen be Black Aja. In fact, even when it was pointed out that there had to be, with the scene in Great Hunt that everyone points to, you know, either Varen or Moraine has to be lying. And in New Spring, we see Moraine take the oath, so we know it can't be her. But I never expected that Varen was a dark friend or a Black Aja. I mean, we like to throw about the theory of a plaid Aja or a purple Aja dedicated to, you know, fighting for the light as hard as the Black Aja fights for the dark friends. But, when Egwene said, even when we had that scene where Egwene comes into her room, Varen says, "That dress you're wearing is green," and Egwene's shocked and says, "You're Black Aja." I expected her to deny it. I expected her to give us information about something more. And then when she said, "Yes, I am," I was floored. And quite honestly, I'm going to be perfectly honest. I cried when Varen died. It was sad.
You were not the only one.
I had to stop reading and get up and walk away. I was like, oh my God, I can't handle this. Not Varen.
I couldn't put the book down. Honestly, it was like riveting. I'm like, no way. Go back 5 pages, reread, make sure that I read that right. Yup. Oh my Lord, what the? And I just kept on going. I think I finished the book in less than 24 hours total from start to finish.
Yeah.
I mean, that part there, right? I reread it 3 times just to make sure I read it right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, the funny thing is after I read that, I put the book down and I needed to talk to someone, but I couldn't because there was no one else in the house with me at the time. So I grabbed my voice recorder and I started talking to myself. Unfortunately, you'll never hear that because since then I've dumped everything off my voice recorder. So,
I stopped reading and I went online to Theoryland. And I made a post, and you can still go find it. And the post title is 598. It's just a page number because it was the key moment for me in the book.
Yeah.
Moment in the book, period. It was the key moment in the book, period. I mean, out of all the big things that happened, I think that was the biggest shocker, the most climactic thing for any Watt fan in the thing. I mean, yes, there's the Battle of the Tower that happened afterwards. And there's this and that and everything else happening. But to anyone who's a fan of the Aes Sedai, of Varen, of Egwene, of anything, I would have to say that page 598 was the climax of the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was a little shocked just at how long the secret, if you want to call it that, really got kept. I mean, when you really think about it, Robert Jordan gave us essentially a direct, you know, clue in book 2, and then I think later again in book 3 when they finally meet up with Moraine, and Moraine says, "No, I didn't send Varen at all." And I myself went back and forth. I was like, "Well, why would a member of the Black Aja do all the things she's doing? I mean, there's keeping your cover, but you know, it seems like we see enough of her doing things that legitimately work to help Rand that you're like, how can she be though?" So, you know, I went back and forth for the longest time, and my experience upon reaching The end of news in Teleron Riyadh basically came down to, yes, Baron said, taking a calm sip of her tea. I suspect that you do. By the way, that dress you're wearing is green. By the way, that dress you're wearing is green. By the way, that dress you're wearing is green. Because it was at that point, my eyes just refused to scan down to the next sentence. It just kept going back and forth like, huh. It was kind of just like, I almost had to wonder how much of a relief was it to Baron just to, you know, to anybody, regardless of who it was, and I mean particularly to Egwene in this scene, to just openly lie to have it out there. You know, just that kind of, oh, I've been able to do this for so long, and it's so hard to play by the rules when you don't have to.
Yeah, a frivolous lie was probably not among the many things that she was able to do very often, certainly.
I
feel like I should explain my, now that you've all expressed how, depressed and sad you were, I feel like I should explain how I'm not a callous person. When I jumped out of my chair and I was so excited when we got to this part, because I had always believed, or, that was one of the first kind of theories, it was one of those things that threads in the book that, I put together all these little circumstantial evidences or pieces, and I thought I had figured out, something that didn't seem that significant, but certainly something that Robert Jordan was hiding, and which was, I always thought that Varen had made contact with the Forsaken, especially, or specifically, Lanfear, and that she had done work. I mean, I phrased it to people that she was willing to trade knowledge for, that she would do things for the Forsaken for knowledge or information, and because of all those little things. And Robert Jordan, during Dragon Con of 2005, when I asked him specifically, and it's funny because I look back at the question, I phrased it terribly, but I said, did Lanfear and Varen ever have any contact? And his answer was no. And I remember that moment. I think one of the Theorylanders with me on the tape, you can hear her kind of giggle and say, oh, poor Tamarillin. Because it had been something that since I had started Theorland in 97 or 98, whatever it was, it had been something that I had just constantly pounded. I would always throw it out there and people would be like, no, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. And I thought to myself, I'm going to go to Dragon Con and really prove this thing out. And, it was one of a few depressing moments of Dragon Con, when he killed a couple of theories. But yeah, that was one of them that I felt like he took off the table, and I was really depressed for, I'll be honest, 5 years.
Wow.
And until I read this part of the book, when I read that, like everything that I had felt, about Varen, even though I hadn't come out and said, I think I was with everyone else, she was working for the light, and I felt like she was working for the dark side, so I never thought of her as Black Aja. I thought of her as just Varen, kind of her own person that, wasn't really following anyone's, tune. It was just kind of Varen doing her thing. And so when I read this, it was... I felt that I had vindication, not in the sense that I was exactly right, but I felt like Robert Jordan lied to me. Like he purposely could not, I don't think he lied. And what's funny is I asked Brandon about this because I wanted to know, because I thought that I had asked him, something a little bit more clear, like had Lanfear ever spoken to Varen, or something. I said contact, which is a stupid word. It was a terrible question, because I can see Robert Jordan in his mind going, no, they never touched. Yep, no contact. It's not a very clear question, and he was easily able to kind of dispatch with it and move on to something else. But I mean, I want to know what's going on in his head, which was, wait a second, I'm not ready to, this is something I've been hiding since, for 15 years. This is something that's going to come out and surprise everyone. I'm certainly not going to answer this question with anything indicating that, Lanfear and Varen had ever had any contact, because that would ruin the whole thing. So it's something I did ask Brandon. And I feel like I'm not giving up anything that Brandon said to me in private, because he wrote this on the opening flap. He signed this in the book, so I feel like, it's made for public consumption. He said, for Matt, page 598, you might be vindicated. Of course, he doesn't answer in a substantial way to say I will be vindicated, but there's hope in me again that this little pet theory of mine that I've held for the last 12 or 13 years, which shows you just how much of a fanatic I am, that it may come out to be true. And that's why I leapt off of my chair, and I think I even pumped my arm in the air a couple times, I'll be honest.
Yeah, well, I think nothing defines us probably better than slightly fanatic.
It was funny. It was at 4 o'clock in the morning. No one saw me, but now everyone on this podcast knows.
Well.
Yeah, 4 o'clock in the morning. Our first long servant, when he got the box full of goodies for the midnight release, it happened to include a copy of the book. And guess what? Guess he was all night long.
That is true. I did read it before the yeah. Well, I got it that night. I got it the day before, the box the day before, and I think the box arrived. It was like 7 o'clock in the evening. I think I picked the book up once I put my kids down. I kind of looked at it. Of course, you're gonna read it, right? I mean, I looked at it like, oh, it's okay. It's just right there. I don't need to do anything about this. And I put my kids to bed, and I think I'd actually fallen asleep putting them to bed. And I think I woke up at 10, and I walked out. And I saw the book, and I sat down, and I finished, I think, at 7 o'clock in the morning. So,
wow.
Yeah, it was so then I arrived, right? Spencer, I arrived, and I'm like, I've read it. Yeah. But I only had it, 24 hours before anyone else, so.
Yeah. That would have helped me out a lot. Jason wanted us to do a podcast on it, and I ended up doing one with he and Jennifer Liang, and he said, can you get it done, you know, in order, like, I think it gave me 24 hours to read the thing, and I was recovering, you'll appreciate this, Mark, from pneumonia myself, so I can't vouch for the thoroughness of my first read, but I crammed through that thing so fast, I was like, I had to sit right down and start it over again, because I was sure I'd missed, you know, dozens of key points, because I just had to go through it so quickly.
I remember
so
a couple of... That's the same way I was. I just plowed through it, and then I stopped. I'm like, wait a minute, I missed something. And I plowed through it again. I think I finished it 3 times in the first 5 days.
Yeah.
Kind of hilarious. I remember the deadline. It was a general, hey, can you guys read the book and be ready to podcast on it tomorrow? And for me, there was absolutely no way I could. I was very sad about that. But I do remember for probably... 2 podcasts after that, bringing up things that I had read, and Virginia's like, where did that happen? I was like, yeah, that was a quick read through for you, wasn't it?
what I find is really interesting is that the Varen piece is still, like you said, I think someone brought it up, you know, it's so shocking, and there really isn't a lot of information. You know, a lot of it's just kind of speculative at this moment, right? We have a bunch of the letters. We have Varen, you know, making that deal with Matt. We have her showing up with Egwene, saying that Rand, I mean, she says some really remarkable things about Rand really believing he knows the Dark One. And here's this Aes Sedai who's studied the Dark One for at least 70 years. You know, studied, not Rand studied, where he picks up a couple books and thinks he understands, you know, prophecy, but really studied and watched the Dark One as much as possible. And she says, like, after all this, I don't know him or know what he's after, you know. And then she reveals to Egwene, you know, she says stuff like, you know, Rand, you know, he thinks he knows the battle he's fighting, but he doesn't know. You know, and she kind of brings up all these points, and you're sitting here going, you know, what does this portend for the next 2 books? You know, everything, are we to believe that everything that Rand believes about the Dark One and the last battle and all the things he's supposed to do, that he's wrong? Or are we to believe that it's just going to, you know, he's going to be surprised and how many people are going to betray him because the Dark One's been, you know, turning all sorts of people that are around him? You know, what are we supposed to believe from Varen's words? And I think those are the kind of discussions that Brandon hasn't heard as much of, that, you know, he's kind of surprised. And so I'm curious, you know, what do you think Varen is trying to, or what do you think Varen believes, you know, that Rand is mistaken about, that we're going to, you know, kind of experience over the next 2 books?
Well, for myself, I think, you know, a lot of time,
because since the first book, since Eye of the World, the Ishamael has been acting in the place of the Dark One, and so I think we have this tendency to substitute, when we think of the Dark One, rather than thinking about him and his motivations and his actions, we think of Ishamael or Moradin. And, you know, it could very well be that, that's completely off. I mean, we know that Moradin assumes that the Dark One's ultimate goal is the destruction of the Wheel and of time itself. We don't know that that's actually true, but we kind of assume that it is, or at least I have in the past. And, you know, I think a lot of the problem that we as readers have, and especially that Rand has, I mean, looking at Rand, he really, really has this problem where rather than thinking of the Dark One's motivations and what the Dark One is going to do, most of the time he's thinking of Baal-Zamon or Ishamael, Moradin, rather than actually this deity, basically, evil deity that exists outside the pattern. We don't know what it wants. We don't understand it at all. Like Baron said, we don't understand it. And I think that's a long of what you meant.
I don't think Rand's given two thoughts to the larger metaphysical ramifications of what the Dark One is. He's been basically focused local on that.
But do you think that she's going, I mean, do you believe she's left that type of information? Or, I mean, do you think that that's what Egwene's, you know, what she's going to find as she reads through this entire thing? Or do you believe that it's just, that Varen just ran out of time?
Honestly,
I think it's more that she ran out of time. I think she ran out of time. There was a lot more that could have been said. There was a whole smoking lot that Varen could only put down in the book. And I mean, as her oath says, she cannot reveal anything until the hour of her death. So I mean, everything that she's got, I mean, she tried to reveal in that book. But there's still a lot more from a lady who, as I just finished rereading, what was it, page 598 there, a woman who's been an Aes Sedai since before Egwene's grandmother was born. And I use that as an almost direct quote. I mean, if she's been around that long, she's probably been a dark friend for almost as long because, well, that's kind of how the Aes Sedai work. So, I mean, that's a lot of stuff for, I mean, even if you say people live in the Wheel of Time series for, I don't know, 60, 70 years. Say 60 years times 3, it's 180 more years of stuff to cram into 1 hour. No way she got it all out in time.
Well, you know, I think I'm going to dispute that, though, because I don't believe that Varen, obviously she had this information that she needed to give to Egwene, but I don't think that she would have taken that final step unless she knew that she had already done all she could, that she had given as much as she possibly could before then, because she knows that she is the only source of this knowledge, and she would not take that source of knowledge away from the world if she didn't know that she had done all she could to leave as much knowledge as she had, as she possibly was able to. Or honestly, I don't know why she didn't spend more time looking for the Oath Rod. Does anyone have any theories on why she didn't do that? Why she went for the immediate drug myself and hide in Egwene's chambers rather than spending another day or two looking for the Oath Rod? Why does she have this sense of urgency?
Something must have happened. I thought she was betrayed, probably, or something had happened that precipitated that. That was my thought.
Yeah, that did seem a little bit rushed, and I don't think anyone asked that question during the tour. I mean, it did come up to me. You know, it seemed like, well, I mean, that goes back to this main question. Why pick Egwene? You know, why not tell this to Rand? Is it because she doesn't trust people around Rand, and she doesn't trust Rand at this point? And so, you know, obviously Rand hasn't had his moment by that time.
Well,
you know,
I have something to say about that one. Sorry to jump in there.
I think
the reason she chose Egwene is because way back in, I believe it was the second. Yes, I believe it was actually in Great Hunt, but it might have been Dragon Reborn. But the one where Varen first gives the Ring Tarangriel to Egwene. I think it was Great Hunt, but it might have been Dragon
Reborn. Dragon Reborn. I'm reading it now.
Okay. It's been a while since I did that, and my friend told me, yeah, just start at book 5. That's where all the good stuff happens. I was like, great. But I mean, ever since then, I mean, Varen, I believe Varen had this mild bond of
knowing that she could trust Egwene to do the right thing. I mean, everyone always said from day one, Elaine would end up on the throne of Andor, and Egwene would be the Amyrlin seat. So, I mean, ever since the beginning there, everyone's been saying, oh, Egwene's going to go so far, Egwene's going to go so far. And Varen took that one step to trust, to give her that ring. And I think it established that bond of trust that's lasted throughout all of these books. I mean, it's just one of those things where that one little thing that happens way back when it seems inconsequential, but it sticks with somebody in their head over the years and over time. And I mean, the same thing could happen, or the same thing has happened in real life to me, so I don't see how it couldn't happen in the book as well.
She never trusted Egwene enough at the time she gave her the Tarangriel to give her the notes of Coriana Nadial, and she never gave her those notes later either, when they probably wouldn't have done her much good because she'd already learned so much. But I really think that the reason that she went to Egwene was because Egwene was immediately in a position to do something about all the dark friends and Black Aja that she'd uncovered, and nobody else really was. Rand would have just gone nuts with it. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I would agree with you, Virginia. I think the reason that she went to Egwene was because ultimately, I think in Varen's heart, she was still, Black Aja or not, she was still an Aya Sedai. And I think the point of her giving all of that information to Egwene was because she, at some level, wanted to, you know, be a part of the cleansing that she knew would eventually happen. And being able to contribute to removing all of those Black Sisters from the, you know, positions of power that they had within the Tower and within the Rebels. So I think that her choice of going to Egwene ultimately was because of her, you know, loyalty to the Tower.
I like that. And also, if you go back and read it, she does say, I wonder if Egwene was on her list of people, because she does say that she was afraid she'd come, and I think the quote is, find you still dawdling with your friends outside. I wonder if Egwene was somebody she was hoping she could trust, and she came and found that she, you know, because then she was really impressed that she had infiltrated the White Tower, in essence, and where she was in the position that, you know, Varen believed she could really do something about it. Because, you know, a lot of these people were still in the Tower, and, you know, there's a difference between the Amyrlin outside of the walls of the White Tower claiming Black Aja are in the Tower versus her being there and being able to do something about it. So I wonder if Egwene was one of a couple of people she was hoping to leave this with, or kind of on a short list.
And all those really are logically, and even though she was a Brown, Varen was very logical, and so I don't think that she went brashly about this decision. Like Jesse said, she had been an Aes Sedai for almost 200 years, and 200 years of Aes Sedai training says that the Aes Sedai know better than most of the rest of the world how things should be run. And I think Varen was experienced enough to know that that's not always true. But I think she believed that with Egwene, especially, being as powerful a leader as we know Egwene to be, and I think Varen would have seen this in her, she would have believed that. But I think another, maybe even bigger part of why she didn't leave this was Rand, is because Rand is not, when she left, Rand was nowhere near mentally stable. And especially not with Cad Swain there trying to manipulate him and all these other shadow enemies that he has flitting around him. He has gone far off the deep end, and anyone with enough sense can see you don't impart something this powerful to someone who's so unhinged. And, you know,
yeah, she's almost dismissive of him in the text. You know, she says, he's a fiery one. I must say I worry about the lad. I'm not sure he understands how the Great Lord works. You know, she doesn't afford him the same, you know, oh my gosh, we have to take care of him in this moment. If not, the whole world ends, in that sentence. You know, she talks about him as a lad and she worries about him, but she really, it's this book that she's put together. Later on she says, we all seek to change the future. I think I might just have a chance at doing so. You know, I know these books are much focused on Rand, but Varen's almost, in a way, placing what she's put together in this book as a chance to change a future that, without her, whether or not they had Rand wouldn't have succeeded. You know, that's what it seems like to me that she's saying here.
Yeah, if I may make a Lord of the Rings crossover, we think of Rand as Frodo, and I think that's a misconception. Actually, I think that the three boys, the three Taverin, are actually more together, are the Frodo of the story, and then Varin can be Sam.
I see her more as a Gandalf figure myself, but that may be just because I like her so much.
No, because Moraine fills the Gandalf role. So maybe she's a Merry or Pippin. She can be either of those, I guess.
Well, we can debate that
forever. A
very
wise Merry and Pippin, a very old and wise and powerful.
yeah. Not the singing, drinking songs in the halls of.
Well, I guess I have to sort of bring us to the question that nobody's brought up yet, is Varin's connection to the Horn of Valyr, because the last time we saw the horn, Swan told Varin that she would hide it where only they two would know, and people have postulated that that's where Varin ran off from the manor house in Tyr. That was why she left, to go get the horn to try and deliver it to Matt, but she didn't deliver it to Matt. So are we to assume that now either that information is conveyed in a letter that she gave to somebody else, or is Swan Sanche the only person who now knows where the Horn of Valyr is hidden? Or am I totally out of my mind?
No, I think that it's in the letter that she gave to Matt. I think that she told Matt where the horn was, because I think she knows that, you know, Matt is the only one who can, unless something happens to Matt, he's the only one that it will work for. So I think that's who she told.
Well, we do have the question of what was in all the rest of the letters that Varin had. I mean, she has a fair number. When she went to Matt, we saw that she had quite a stack of letters that she had yet to deliver. So the question remains, what was in all those, and who were they to? And personally, I believe that a lot of that information is, in case Matt doesn't do his part, the part will still be taken care of.
I was actually muted, unfortunately, at the time, but I was going to agree with Jesse that, I mean, she wheedled that promise out of Matt, do not open this letter for this number of days. And, I mean, they negotiated it down, and I have a sneaky suspicion that, like Jesse there, that, that's where the horn is, among other possible things. I mean, we all know that the three of them are linked, Matt, Perrin, and Rand, so, I mean, Varin trying to be as helpful as she could be, despite whatever other oaths that she had going for her. I mean, who knows, she might have found something else to help Rand in the process. Wouldn't that just have been fun?
Yeah, someone reported that part of that stipulation, that Sandersons did say that Varin's conditions to Matt did have something to do with her oath, that last hour of death oath. But, he said, but apparently he reported that there was a lot more going on than just that in it, but that it was part of kind of the stipulations that she set.
Wow.
One thing that you've made me think of that I kind of wanted to bring up in this discussion that has kind of annoyed me about what was revealed during Varin's confession is what wasn't revealed, and that she only revealed the one oath. Why only reveal one of the Black Ajah oaths?
And maybe they're written down in the book.
Maybe there is just
one. I've wondered that if they're revealed in anywhere else, or if, you know, why if you only have an hour, wouldn't you just tell Egwene what all of the oaths are? That's always kind of bothered me a little bit, that it was just that one.
Go ahead.
There are a lot more oaths that are there, and I mean, we all know that Egwene is fairly questionable and argumentative, because we all got the idea, like as we're reading that Varin was basically telling her to sit down, shut up, and listen, because I've only got this much time to go through it. And even with that idea, I have a sneaky suspicion that Egwene would have jumped in about, what do you mean about this, and tried to wheedle as much more answers about the various oaths that are there. So, I mean, it was probably more, at least in my mind, a thing of expedience. Like, this is the important one that you need to know about, and the others you'll probably find out at some point down the road, or I might have hidden them in a letter to you somewhere. I mean, it's probably going to be one of those read and find outs, but I guess I'm thinking it was more of a thing where there's too many to list, or Egwene would have just kept on going too much, and then we wouldn't have found out all the important stuff, like about the bookmark Terangriel or any of the other stuff that she revealed.
Well, I don't know that there could be too many to list, because we have to assume that the addition of an oath, or maybe even the subtraction of an oath, would have a different effect. Well, I guess we don't have to. So I could be flying off the handlebars here, but I assume that the addition of an oath or the subtraction of an oath will have a different amount of oaths will have a different effect on the look of an Aes Sedai. And so when they take the three oaths as Aes Sedai, they have a very pronounced effect as time goes on. And so I have to assume that if they have a different number of oaths as Black Ajah, it would have a different effect on them, and then you would be able to tell the difference. So I'm not sure how much you can change an ageless face, but... And like I said...
I would agree. I definitely tend to agree on that point. I'm assuming that there are three oaths, three Black Ajah oaths to counter the three oaths that regular Aes Sedai take.
Yeah,
go ahead.
And, you know, Robert Jordan just loves to use over and over the number three and just have it repeating. I mean, everywhere, even in The Gathering Storm, looking on Encyclopedia Watt, it says that when Egwene does her clean out of the towers, the Rebel Tower and the White Tower, for in both camps, it says Varen only missed three Black Aja members among the rebels, which means that there were three that Egwene caught that weren't in the book, and in the White Tower, Varen only missed three Black Aja members in the White Tower. So same thing there. It's even in little things that don't seem like they're important, RJ used the number three a lot, and so I just off of that and other things, I just have to assume that the Black Ajah only have the three oaths. But why Varen wouldn't tell them all to Egwene? I think you're right about that, Mark. Is that there's so much more important things that have to be said. I mean, there's a lot of information in the book, and Egwene can go through the book, can read it, and learn this information. But there are some things that have to actually be said that can't be accurately written or can't be portrayed right using the written text. And so I think that you're right. There were more important things to go over than the oaths of the Black Ajah.
Yeah, I mean, focuses on the tome that she put together. There's a quote, and the only reason I know this, I was reading Path of Daggers prologue the other day, and she says, kind of in her thoughts, she says, one day she would have to write out the cipher she used in her notebooks. A lifetime's worth of them filled cupboards and chests in her room, her rooms above the White Tower Library. One day, but she hoped not soon. You know, it sounds like the cipher was pretty new, and the question I have is, the book she brought along with all the information for Egwene, do you think that was a compilation of all of the notebooks she's talking about here? Or do you think there are many more things, but she just... this is just the information she put together regarding the Black Ajah for Egwene?
I don't know. I think... Go ahead.
I tend to think the latter on that one. It's probably a compilation of the important bits that Egwene needed to know at the time. Because, I mean, from what I remember of reading through the rest of it afterwards, when she's going through the notebook and she's pointing out little bits and pieces that all seem to make sense, but it all seems to be like everything that she needed in order to weed out the Black Ajah. I mean, it's more all the important bits of that one particular article. Because, I mean, from what you were saying there, she had books and books and books filling up her cupboards in her quarters. I mean, and from what I gathered, I mean, I could be totally wrong, but, I mean, even still, a notebook that you give to somebody isn't going to be more than like maybe a half an inch to an inch thick. And if she's got books and books and books, the only way that you're going to get a notebook that's about an inch thick is if it's about as big as my house in area wise. And that's not something you can cart around too easily.
Well, yes. I have a two-part answer to that. I think that the the notebooks are still to be revealed, and probably in one of the letters or perhaps in the book she gives directions in the cipher as to how to access that information. And that hinges on my question as to what precipitated her voluntary deathbed confession to Egwene. Some event had to have happened. Either she was betrayed and in fear that she was going to be discovered and killed, or she discovered some event that was imminent because of a Black Aja plot that she felt that Egwene needed to know who all these Black Aja were right this minute. And I don't think that she had time to compile everything, and even to do a compilation of everything that she had. I think she just put together what Egwene needed to know right this minute.
What's interesting about that question is what she did know going in. Well, if you go back to the dream Charon Grail, I have a little bit different twist on why she gave it to Egwene, and I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if Lanfear was involved in that decision. I know the Black Aja were not, but I would not be surprised if, just from all the stuff that Jordan puts in around that, where Egwene is going to Varen's quarters and she notices a slip of white going around a corner when she leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Find out later that Elsie is in the tower posing as Lanfear. Varen will not give Egwene, I think, as Virginia pointed out, did not give her any of the notes, left her alone, and then we have Sylvie that shows up who, now, I'm not against the idea that it potentially could have been Varen somehow, but I just don't believe it. It almost certainly was. I don't think it's been confirmed, but it's almost certainly Lanfear.
I think so.
Posing as Sylvie, and the idea that Lanfear just happened to recognize this one dream Charon Grial versus knowing about the dream Charon Grial being in the tower and why it was given to Egwene and knowing she had it and was going to use it and was there waiting for her and was able to follow Egwene and tied into Rand through Egwene through it. And we all know that Teleron Riad is Lanfear's, you know, home of sorts. So the idea that this was all just kind of only Varen's will, I'm really suspect of. But I wonder now if we can go back and pick out a couple more lies on Varen's part. For example, she tells Egwene that she only used the Dream Charon Grail once. And I have no doubt that was a lie. This is a woman that loved and, you know, information and knowledge. And, I have no problem thinking that she used it many times that she used it. I wonder, you know, how many times did she use it and how capable was she of, did she have a talent of a dreamer, or was she able to use Teleron Riad in any way to learn information about the future?
I would just had a flash on something that might be, it's connected to your theory that RJ sort of demolished a little bit, but possibly Varen didn't have direct contact with Lanfear, but Lanfear could have been masquerading as somebody else or using a proxy in order to give information or commands or directions to Varen and so forth. She did have, you know, an association with her, but maybe without directly knowing Lanfear herself. Because Lanfear, we know she masqueraded as other people any number of times, Kylie Shiogi or whatever in the Waste. And I'm sure Sylvie, too. I agree with you on that one. So we know she was really good at that. And Elsgrinwell, you know, she masqueraded as her, as you mentioned. So, yeah, I think that possibly she might have been giving a lot of direction to Varen. But maybe Varen didn't know her as Lanfear.
Sure.
What doesn't make sense to me about that particular theory, though, would be why would Lanfear instruct Varen to give Egwene the dream to Rangriel and then try to take it away from her? Because I always assumed that the same way that as after Egwene starts using the dream to Rangriel and she becomes kind of attached to it and she, you know, indicates like reluctance to give it to Elaine and things like that. I thought that there was some kind of affinity, might not be quite the right word, but some kind of attachment that Terang Riel creates with the person that used it. And I thought that perhaps Lanfear had maybe used that Terang Riel however long ago in the Age of Legends when she was first learning to dream, and that's why she would have had an attachment to it and would have, you know, when she in that scene where they're talking about it. I think it's in the accepted quarters, and Lanfear is posing as Elsie, and she, you know, kind of stares at it for a second, and then later as Sylvie when she tries to take it away. I always just assumed that Lanfear wanted it and wanted to get it back.
No, I think that's possible. Yeah, I think that, but, you know, Viren may have given her the Tarangriel and not necessarily in defiance of her orders, but just because she wasn't told not to. And here's another thought. What if the Black Aja knew about all those dream Tarangriel because the last known dreamer in the tower, Corianna Nettial, was a black sister herself?
Well, what I was thinking might be a possibility that I thought of when you were talking now was that when Varen gives Egwene the dream Tarangriel, she does it at the same time as she gives her the list of Tarangriel that were stolen. And at that time, it's supposedly not known what quite a few of those do. But perhaps being Black Aja herself, she actually knew that quite a few of those were dream Tarangriel, and that would be why she chose to give Egwene the dream Tarangriel.
Well, there's also the connection here, because I've heard, I understand that particular argument on it, but Elsie tells the girls, or you know, who we find out is Lanfear, tells them about the whereabouts of the information left by the Black Aja, which, if I'm not mistaken, the Amarillin knew nothing about.
Okay.
And so the connection between Lanfear having that information, knowing the girls were actually seeking out the Black Aja, you would have to kind of go maybe... What you'd have to do is you'd have to paint Varen telling the Black Aja, and then the Black Aja telling Lanfear, and then Lanfear jumping in and getting involved, which is possible. I'm not saying that's impossible, but there's the connection between the Black Aja search, Egwene and Rand, Egwene and the Dream Tarangriel, Varen and Lanfear, and I'll point these other two out. When Lanfear takes Rand into the mirror world, who shows up the next morning at their camp? Varen shows up in the Great Hunt who kind of babysits the boys, if you recall, until they jump out of the mirror world. And the coincidence of Lanfear showing up that night with Rand and popping him into that mirror world, and then Varen showing up, and that's the whole incident where she said that Moraine sent me. You know, the idea that wasn't Lanfear involved. I mean, of course, it could again be some message coming from Lanfear to some other Black Aja that told Varen to go. But I don't see why Lanfear wouldn't have taken advantage of a Black Aja, as she has many times, you know, to do something for her, you know, while she was going to be away with one of the boys. Because there are various times where they both kind of jump in together and then split apart. And again, it could all be completely coincidental, and we won't know until, you know, maybe we'll never know. Maybe it'll be revealed later on. But I'd be surprised if, like you said, there isn't some, you know, whether or not it was a message that Lanfear sent to Varen or whatever, there is some connection between the search for the Black Aja, that Dream Tarangriel, and Sylvie showing up that night. It could be that Lanfear was aware of this Dream Tarangriel, you know, and just happened to believe that it would be, you know, she'd show up that night and was waiting for her. But it feels to me like there's something more going on there, especially with Varen turning out to be Black Aja.
Yeah, and I sort of like the idea that Corianna Nettial was black too, and that's why she was able to, that's why the Black Aja knew the purpose of all these Tarangriel that nobody else in the White Tower really knew. And Varen just happened to have her notes. You know.
Well, Varen didn't help her. And that was the strange part about that, is Varen tells us the Black Aja did not like that she gave her the Dream Tarangriel, but at the same time offers almost absolutely no help. And if Teleronriad is one of those places, you just don't want to go unless you know what you're doing. And,
yeah.
And she even is brazen enough to tell her that it's very dangerous, and Egwene leaves the room, and she kind of looks at the notes and goes, I should burn these. You know, there's a really strange kind of, as much as we love Varen, you know, that it's kind of a strange moment for her, you know, now that we know that she was really kind of fighting for the good, to not have helped Egwene a little bit more than she did at that moment.
Well, maybe she was not instructed. Maybe she was instructed not to. I mean, they clearly there was a plot to get the Egwene and Nynaeve and Elaine to Tyr, which is why Lanfear was sneaking around the White Tower in all these disguises, setting up phony sacks of Black Aja leavings for them to, you know, for Elsa Grinwald to say that were leftovers and they weren't, which we find out right away, but they went anyway. Maybe Varen was sort of instructed to put Egwene into a vulnerable position and everything, but she couldn't quite bring herself to not give her some sort of help, but she couldn't do more because she was forbidden to do this or that. I mean, the ways of the shadow are convoluted, as we know.
Well, you know, I'm not wondering if the fact that Varen didn't give her the notes is more help than hindrance, because we kind of know Egwene, and if she had gotten those notes and she had read through them and said, okay, I'm good, I understand the dream world, I can do this, would she have gone to the Aiel Wise Ones to get more help and become the dreamer that she has become? I don't think she would have, because I think with her stubbornness and her total belief in the Aes Sedai, and especially at that point in time in the series, I mean, she has changed a lot since then. But at that point in the time in the series, I think if she had had those notes, like they say, knowledge is power, and in the wrong hands, it's dangerous. And I think that in Egwene's hands at that point, that knowledge was too dangerous, which is why Varen didn't let her have it. And quite honestly, I think it did more good for Egwene for her to not get the notes and to kind of stumble and fall and then see that there are those people who have this knowledge of what she's doing and how to do it and can help her than it would have if she had had these notes and had gotten it into her head that she was super dreamer and didn't need anyone's help.
Yeah, I can see that. I like the danger angle.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, I like the danger angle, potentially. I feel like, if I recall that spot, there's a certain absent-mindedness of Varen, and often it's hard to tell if it's always purposeful or not so much. It often kind of almost feels like a relic of compulsion, it almost kind of sometimes feels that way, and I wonder if it was the danger aspect of it or if there was something more going on there.
Yeah, she couldn't have known that Egwene would find another avenue for learning about the dream world, and I think that even had Egwene had the notes, she probably would have, you know, still continued to search for knowledge, so I don't know if that would have necessarily been an issue either, but...
Well, it depends entirely on what was in her notes, because if Corleone had experience with these Aiel Wise Ones and had, or had even kind of seen them like Egwene did the first time, and just seen that there are others who have experience in this world and know what they're doing, and who knows, she could have been approached at some time by the Aiel saying, would you like this service? And in her Aes Sedai manner said, I don't need it. I'm Aes Sedai. I don't need help from you. And then they kind of just, okay, back off. But she could have put something in her notes that said that there are others out there who know more about this and can teach us more. Or maybe not in those words, obviously, but...
If she was black, maybe her notes revealed too much.
Yeah, could be. I don't know. Honestly, there's any number of reasons as to why Varen wouldn't have given her notes, including either she did it for a good reason, because she didn't think Egwene... because she thought that knowledge would be dangerous to Egwene, or she did it for a bad reason because she thought Egwene would be too dangerous with that knowledge, or because the Black Aja thought Egwene would be too dangerous and she was forbidden, I guess, is more likely than Varen thought Egwene would be too dangerous. So, I don't know.
Well, considering that she was a Black Sister for all those years, Varen seemed to manage to avoid doing very much damage, as far as we know. She was able to, it seems like, help the good guys a lot more than hinder them, although we don't know everything that might have happened, but it seems that she was able to remain fairly benign as far as that went.
Yeah, well, what's interesting, if you go back, and I had to look this up while we were talking, the notes themselves, it says that the notes were everything that Corianne had learned in 50 years of studying that peculiar Terangreal. So, you know, it makes you wonder. I mean, I would understand danger as far as it relates to maybe some information prophecy-wise, but necessarily just studying the Terangreal itself, how to use it, as is demonstrated initially when Egwene goes into Terangreal, she has no idea how to get back out of it. And Sylvie is conveniently there to show her. Mm. So it's kind of that whole, is it convenience of the plot to put Sylvie there and Lanfear there to help her, or was there something kind of more going on between telling her anything about it? Or like you said, is it just a mix? Is it just happenstance that she just didn't want to give her too much information? She'd figure it out. She kind of trusted her, which she kind of alludes to in book 12. She alludes to that she just, you know, she felt something about her and trusted her. Maybe that was just her instinct to let her go figure it out and she'd be okay, you know. But I, mainly my kind of going back over this piece was just Varen's, you know, her happenstance statement that, oh, you know, I've used this once, you know. She says a couple of those things throughout the books, you know, about portal stones. She says to Rand that, you know, he had been transported by portal stone more recently than she had been. You know, okay. she says these crazy things, and you think to yourself, you know, she happens to know the symbol for Tommen Head,
yeah.
Right? Like, she happens to have all of this information, you know, that is vital to, you know, them using the portal stones or how to use them or going into Teleronriad or how it's done and all this information. And she gives very little of it away to these kids that she's meeting, which, I mean, yeah, maybe like you're pointing out, maybe it's just a wisdom thing. Maybe it's an instinct on her part. She's only giving what she thinks they really need at that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I that's one of my favorite little scenes where she says that Rand's use of the portal stones is more recent than hers, and then when he confronts her on it, she says, I've never been transported by a portal stone, that's why your use is more recent. I just
right.
thought, what an eye for
the
answer.
Lie. You know,
yeah,
it comes
she can
back
lie,
to the
right.
Thing, right?
Right, but it was a totally eye for the answer, yeah.
Yeah, she uses the eye, and then she, what looks like the truth finally comes out of her, and now all of those things she said, you have to kind of go back with and say, you know, was she lying?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It seems to me that in retrospect that she may have had certain orders from the Dark One or the Forsaken or the other Black Aja or whatever to do certain things regarding Rand and you know, the other people surrounding him, of Lane and the boys and so forth. But it seems like she was kind of working on her own to try and undermine a lot of that as much as possible, giving them help where she could. But if that's true, some of these things make a lot more sense because she was really, she would have to be very circumspect in how much help she gave them because she couldn't be seen to be helping them. And had she been discovered helping them or half obeying her orders or obeying them, you know, in an Aes Sedai sort of way that actually ended up doing what she wanted rather than what she was told to do, that would have blown her cover right away and put her life back in danger again.
I think you brought up an excellent point, which is she did have to play both sides, which I sometimes forget in pushing some of those ideas. Varen did have to play both sides, which I think is an excellent thing to remember as to what information she can give and how she can give it. She had to lie a lot, which was interesting. She had to become just a professional liar.
Yeah, to both sides. I don't know how she kept track of it all, really, when you think of it.
Well, I mean, that's what makes her such a fantastic. I mean, you think a professional liar for 200 to 300 years. You know, and she, maybe I'm reading this wrong. Please tell me, but does it sound like she was always a dark friend? Or she was ever, I mean, she says, right, I found myself in a position where I could either take the oaths or I could reveal that I never actually wanted or intended to, which sounds to me like she, you know, like she was a dark friend at first, but maybe not a very devoted one. I mean, the way I read that is she had an opportunity where they kind of came to her and said, okay, now prove yourself. You know, you've said you're one of us. Now you have to take the oath. And then she had to kind of make the decision, was this really the way that she wanted to go? Is that how you guys read that?
I hadn't until now. Let me grab my book out. I thought my take on the thing was that she had, like I said, I tied it to the 70 years thing being the first time when she couldn't, you know,
well, that's when I think she made, I'm assuming that's when she made the oath.
She probably made the decision, yeah.
But she said,
I never got the impression that she was a dark friend before that. I got the impression she was snooping around with things that she probably shouldn't have and maybe sort of implied, you know, in a typical Aes Sedai fashion that, you know, yes, she was a dark friend, blah, 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 and then got caught out. But I need to go back and read that to be certain.
Yeah, maybe that could be.
That's sort of my take on it, too, was that she sort of stumbled across them and they sort of gave her a choice. It's like either we kill you or you side with us. So take your pick.
But it seems odd.
I don't know.
Did they take those people in?
What was that?
would they take somebody like that in? I mean, if they really believed that it wasn't, she was devoted to the cause, wouldn't they have just executed her? You know, if somebody walked in on your meeting,
yeah,
and they were like, oh, you found a secret black Aja, we'll give you a choice. You'd think that they'd be like, oh, you died accidentally. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of how I read it. She was kind of out searching for the black Aja, trying to gain more information by acting like she was interested, acting like she wanted to join the ranks, as it were. And by the time that she found herself where she had gone too far and there was no way back, and so she had to keep going or die where she stood, basically.
Well, why would she have put herself? I mean, yeah, I mean, it's a curious question, and maybe that, again, maybe this goes back to what Brandon's just flustered by, is that no one's asked these questions about this, which is how long before this moment was she investigating? Yeah, was it that she was investigating the black Aja? Was it because she was kind of a someone that wasn't quite devoted to the cause, but she was kind of a dark? There's a question there that she leaves that hasn't really been sufficiently answered. But yeah, I think that's a very likely scenario.
In my mind, it's more academic curiosity. You know, she's a Brown. She wants to study. She wants to know. She wants to learn. And for some strange reason, whether because she lost a bet or she was just insane. Yeah, just a second.
It's insanity. I have no other excuse.
It feels like it's pretty insane. I mean, that seems like one of those where you know. I mean, she by that point, I mean, she was at least 100 years old, right? I mean,
yeah.
She should have known.
One assumes,
yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, assuming that the 70 years ago was when she swore the oath, and, you know, it would feel like before that, I mean, we're led to believe she's somewhere in the 300 age range, if I'm not mistaken, from interview quotes that have been out there. She's very old. So, you know, what just makes me wonder, what is it, when did she get involved in the search for the black Aja, if that's what it was, and, you know.
Well, all we know, again, from Encyclopedia Watt, is circa 929 New Era, Varian begins a special project. And I don't know my Wheel of Time timeline that well. I think in the book she actually gives a number of years rather than saying some random date. But I'd have to
circa 929 would be 70, about 70 years before present time in Wheel of Time.
How do you know this?
I don't know.
He's white Aja.
Because, huh? Yeah, yeah. 929 New Era would be because it started around the end or like year like 999 or something like that. New Era is when the book first, or when like Eye of the World first starts, and then it's in New Era 970 something that the Aiel War happens. And I don't know why I know that.
You really should have chosen the Brown, Jesse. Yeah.
No, it's white. Staggers. That's why I know it. It's numbers.
Yeah, I'm really glad. I'm really glad that someone knows that, because I don't. And that's honestly, that's the kind of information we need on this geek fest here.
Yeah,
well, may I submit that as proof positive that I lean toward the green, not the Brown? Could I be? I said that.
Just because she's brown too, doesn't make you not brown, Virginia. Sorry, you're stuck brown.
This is the other pertinent, what I would say, pertinent book signing report. It was from 1996, I think it's Balticon. The report was, Jordan said specifically the Varian is not from the Age of Legends, which I guess was a theory out there. Other than that, he was fairly vague, but he implied that she's no older than, say, 300. There's a reason why Aes Sedai respect a sister with gray hair, he said.
Hmm.
So, I mean, even if you said she's 200 plus or 250 years old, and then you take into account the 70, 71 years since that big mistake, she calls it, you know, and maybe it's because she calls it a mistake, we can kind of go along with that theory that, you know, maybe she was getting pretty bored 150 in or something, you know, 200 in. She was like, man, what haven't I gone around and studied? And, you know, somehow she got into this black Aja thing, and it was, you know, she kind of mistakenly got a little bit deeper than she intended to. I mean, I think that's very possible.
Well, I think it might have been in Haunting, but I don't remember. There is one point, I don't remember exactly which book it was in, but there is one point where she's reflecting to herself in her point of view that this will certainly not be the first time that her thirst for knowledge had landed her in hot water. So she evidently has had an overriding desire for knowledge that clearly took precedence over her personal safety and maybe good sense.
Well, I mean, this goes all back to the Black Ajah, the Purge, right? And maybe it was all involved there. And it kind of makes me wonder how I'm not really up on the Purge from because wasn't there something that happened? Why am I kind of reaching here? I thought there was something that happened.
That vileness right after the Aiel War or whatever.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I guess that would have been only like in the 20s. Maybe I don't know why I connected those two.
When the two Amur ones died mysteriously. One of them we know was killed by the Black, and I think the other one, too.
May
I interject with something? I meant to say it earlier, but I kind of got sidetracked because nobody would let me speak.
I'm sorry.
Talking about, I'm used to it. It's a combination of Varen's age, which we were just talking about, and the oaths that they swear. Because if you guys remember the Kin, I mean, they slow... As they called it, their wording, not mine. Even after only like 20 some odd years, they start to slow by using the power. And I mean, the less you use the power, the longer it'll take you for your slowing to occur. But I mean, you look at the Kin and you look at the Aiel. I mean, even those that do channel a lot, I mean, they still look youthful even beyond or above and beyond how long they've been channeling. So your comment earlier about the three oaths giving you the ageless look, I don't really think that goes along. I mean, it might help towards the agelessness itself, but the youthful, like the slowing and stuff, I don't think that has anything to do with the self.
Well, yeah, and Robert Jordan went to great lengths to separate the two. I mean, when he talks about the Kin, he talks about slowing. I mean, the eldest there, she looks like an old woman, and she's 500 some odd, whereas the oldest Aes Sedai, who is what, Cat Swain, I think, you look at her and you can tell she's old because of the color of her hair. Her face, though, you can look at it once and she looks like she's in her 30s. Look at it again, she's in her 20s. Look at it again, she's somewhere in her 50s. And when they say ageless face, that's what they mean, is that you can't tell what age it is. Whereas when he says they're slowing, you can make a guess as to what age it is, but you're off by probably a couple hundred years.
Yeah, they just age more slowly than, as the Aiel says, years do not touch a wise one in the way that they do a normal man or woman, but it isn't the ageless space. There's a distinct difference between those two things.
Yeah, I could have sworn there was something in one of the books, and I mean, I'm going to go back another couple of books to more of the Aiel, because I could have sworn there was something about one of the wise ones that was like that, but nevertheless, I stand corrected. I was wrong. You may jot it down in the logs.
Sorry?
Meh.
Don't be. I'm glad to be proven wrong. I'm always glad to be proven wrong. Another side tangent here. I warned Spencer about this, but I'm going to have to duck out right away, guys. I have other commitments that are going to take my presence from you guys, as much as I regret it.
Well, we appreciate you joining us for this amount of time. Thank you, Mark. It's great that you could come back. We hope you'll come back again soon.
Nice to meet you, Mark.
Thank you so much to everybody. It's been a pleasure, as always. Matt, hopefully we'll talk to you again sometime. I just signed up on your forums there, so hopefully I'll be catching you a few times.
Yeah, absolutely. Just start talking. I get involved. I've stopped talking about everything, and I'm very much a specialist when it comes to what I like to get involved in. So, anything that relates to transmigration, Asmodean, Vanir, Landfear, Mirror Worlds, Portal Worlds, Parallel Worlds, the Finns, I'll definitely be in that conversation. So, look forward to seeing you there.
Just a note to Andrew in Virginia. We got to get him back more often.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, we definitely have to have you back. I love talking about the Finns and the Portal Worlds, and I love all that stuff. And, that would be great.
Yeah. Well, I had – yeah, see you, Mark.
All right.
Bye, Mark.
I'm just going to bid you all farewell. And yes, thank you, Miss Virginia. I will do my best not to cough out a lung tonight.
I will see if I can find a yellow to send to you, but I'm not holding out a lot of hope.
All right. Cheers.
Good night. Bye.
By the way, I want to plug DragonCon. I'm going to be going, and I think I'll be on a couple panels there. So, and I'll definitely be pushing Jennifer to do a lot of theory panels. So anyone that can make it, I'd love to see you there.
When is DragonCon? Well, I just might as well plug it right.
That's a good question. I believe it's, if I'm not mistaken, whoever runs DragonCon, don't kill me. I thought it was first week of September, but I don't know the exact dates. But you can, that's what we have Google for, right? Google.
Yeah, exactly.
I do know that it is the first week of September because one of my coworkers was talking about the fact that the exhibit we're currently working on closes down, I want to say September 5th, and that being our last week is also the week of DragonCon. So.
Yeah, I plan on bringing many, many questions. Traditionally, for me at least, it's a place to get as many answers as possible. I think Brandon will be there, so and I'm sure we'll be doing a couple of panels there at the Wheel of Time. So,
I've been trying to get to either DragonCon or JordanCon or both for about 3 years now, and I just can't seem to get across the country that we get to them. It's just been pure bad luck. I need some of Matt's luck to get there this time.
Yeah. I know how you feel, you know.
Or a portal stone would work.
I feel, you like to joke that you live in the modern day Two Rivers, but still,
yeah.
You're not that far from civilization. I'm really stuck in the backwoods, and I have no real ability to get to all these fun conventions and such. I wish I could. I really wish I could.
But you have DSL and I don't. that eliminates you from the total backwater. Well, there you go. We don't have that either.
We had a great recording session with Matt Hatch, and there is a lot more to come, but we're going to take a break right now, and you'll be able to listen to the rest of it in the next episode. So until then, may you find water and shade.